Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from thehammerspeaks.com, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just two Daves talking all the Steelers football you could ever want. And now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 2, Episode 17. Remember, if you're on iTunes, you can subscribe to the Terrible Podcast and download it to whatever device you use to listen. Dave, Steeler Nation can't get football fast enough. Back in the saddle, 1 o'clock. The home opener at Heinz Field against the Seattle Seahawks.
Yeah, if you ever needed a good get well game, this would probably be the one that you circle on the calendar coming off of that loss to the Ravens there. So I'm expecting big things, and we're going to talk about them today. But definitely the Seahawks, I would really be afraid with them. You know, if I were them coming to town right now.
Absolutely, and for those of you who are here in this podcast, if you didn't get to hear episode 16, our last one, it was with Eric Williams of the Tacoma News Tribune, and Eric did a really good job of breaking down the Seahawks for us, talking about personnel and schemes and things they do. We'll certainly get into some more of that today, but I highly recommend taking a listen to that if you want to get some more background on the Seahawks. Dave, let's wrap up last week, finally. Put that thing in the rearview mirror. I guess the last thing, we talked about it a little bit in the last episode, the chop blocking stuff. Merrill Hodge commented on it on ESPN. He gets to see game tape, the actual film tape the coaches see. He said there were repeated instances where they were definitely chop blocking illegally. The point, obviously, is that you're allowed to cut a guy if he's not engaged with another player. But if you do it while he's engaged with another player, that's a penalty. And then Ed Bouchette went on and discussed, they talk about defenseless players all the time, and obviously the focus is on offensive players and protecting them. And he brought up the question, and why is nobody protecting the quote-unquote defenseless defensive player? What are your thoughts?
Well, you know, after you dig further into this thing, and I think Pro Football Talk had something bringing the actual rule to light here, basically, you know, a player for an illegal chop block, according to them, has to be one position away. So in this case, it would have had to been, you know, if Hampton was engaged with Matt Burke at center, it would have to be a tackle or position one, you know, player away.
And they talked about maybe the Steelers were misinterpreting the rule, but the point may be maybe everybody's misinterpreting the rule.
Yeah, I think maybe so, because, I mean, I've always interpreted a player as being engaged with another player. If another player comes in and goes, you know, below the waist or at the knees more specifically, and I know for a fact that's been called in the past. I mean, I know for a fact that has been called in the past. I think that's something that they need to look at, you know. Now, the most blatant one, of the game was that very first play that the Ravens ran on offense there, where Ray Rice busted around left end there. That was the most blatant. There was also a second one, I believe, in about 10 minutes or so in the first quarter as well. There were numerous other cut blocks, because if you remember in the last podcast, I said, you know, one of the things that stuck out at me was how good that they cut block, and, you know, with that new scheme of theirs that the Ravens offensive line was running there. But, you know, when you get into the chop blocks, when the guy's engaged with another player, you could really end the guy's career very, very fast there. I thought the Steelers players did a good job of kind of, you know, they responded when asked. I don't think they went running to the media with this. You know, they're going to put it behind them. It's going to be in their back of the head going forward. But, I guess when it all comes down to it, these things were legal, you know, according to the rules or whatnot, at least from what I've seen. And there wasn't very many of them throughout the game. So, you know, I think we kind of called it, tagged it sour grapes, I guess, last game. Maybe it's a little bit of that going forward. There is reason of concern here, though, and it's something that needs to be looked at going forward. To protect these guys are so up on safety, and let's face it, that's not safe.
Yep, no question. We've talked about this. When you think about the NFL and you think about chop blocking, you think Denver Broncos back in the day. They had their zone scheme of blocking. That's really what they did under Mike Shanahan, and the offensive line coach's name is escaping me right now.
Alex Gibbs, is that who you're talking about?
Yeah, Alex Gibbs, exactly. Yeah. So they were the big proprietors of that type of system. You know, it's one of the things that gets discussed in rule changes, whether the NFL should outlaw that. And the way things are going, you would think, just in principle. Now, this has nothing to do with the Steelers-Ravens game, but you would just think in principle, you don't want guys who are engaged up high getting cut at the knees. It, like you said, that's career-ending stuff. And I'm surprised, just over the years when I think about this, I'm just surprised they haven't done anything about this rule over time.
Yeah, me too. Now, when a player is one-on-one, you know, Hines Ward has been accused for years, especially with Ed Reed, you know, of going after his legs and all like that. One-on-one, I say it's fair game, you know. But
yeah, because you have to be facing the guy, first of all.
Right. Now, of course, anytime you do it from behind or whatnot, certainly that's, you know, that should be flagged and possibly fined. But, you know, engaged with these offensive and defensive linemen engaged, big bodies, a lot of movement going on, you know, like you said, it's going to happen this year. Trust me, someone's not on the Steelers, but somewhere down the line, someone's going to be lost for the year, maybe a career to one of these type blocks. And I bet it comes to surface.
You tossed in the fine there thing. I'll tell you, let's change tact a little bit, but still on the Ravens game. Troy got fined $15,000 for the horse call. And two things surprised me about it. First of all, I had always thought horse collar is a relatively new rule, but I thought you had to be inside on the pad. Troy did drag the guy down from behind, but he did it. And the thing that impressed me about that tackle is he did it one-handed holding the jersey. That was a pretty good show of strength in your hand and your arm pulling the guy down. And I didn't, you know, I'd be interested to just see how the rule is written, and I haven't looked yet, that he pulled him down by the jersey from behind. And I didn't know that was illegal. I thought you had to be in the pads, but I guess if you ride the guy down from behind or pull him down from behind, it's considered a horse collar.
Yeah, and I guess most of this result, you know, if you remember Terrell Owens a few years back, didn't he suffer a pretty good, a pretty good injury because of something like this? And I think that's kind of what got this started with the rule change and the penalty and all like that. I mean, and the fines to go along with it. $15,000, boy, that's pretty excessive if you ask me. And Troy didn't want to talk about it. And I found out through sources first, you know, that it was the $15K fine I posted up the other night there. It finally came to light yesterday, the amount, which was indeed $15K. I almost wonder, though, if there was something else tagged into that as well. Maybe the punch or swing or whatnot in that game. I think the NFL releases those fines today at some point. So maybe it'll come out of what it was. It'll be interesting to see if also the Ian Badejo, you know, the other guy for the Ravens on that tackle on Antonio Brown that was called for the horse collar. Seems only fair that he would be fined as well. So I guess we'll know the true answer to all this later this afternoon. But $15K is pretty excessive for a horse collar tackle.
Yeah, I was just surprised. Well, let's move forward here a little bit. Talk about the Steelers. Before we get into this game, tell me what you thought about the personnel packages offensively that the Steelers presented in the Ravens game. Now, the second half, or as we get into certainly in the fourth quarter, maybe a little less interesting because the score dictates certain things. But really focusing on the first half, anything surprise you? Did the personnel packages as they came out and the play calling, was it pretty much as you expected?
Yeah, I mean, I expected them to try to throw in this game. I thought they would throw to get on top and then, go from there, then go to the run. They came out, they ran the ball well, and, they just got behind thanks to their own, you know, shooting themselves in the foot or whatnot. Basically, personnel-wise, well, you know, I expected, a few more two tight end and three tight end sets, you know, that we had saw out of the Steelers, you know, during the preseason. Now, of course, it's hard to dictate this, you know, in a game that got out of hand so quickly. But in total, they only ran, you know, eight 12 personnel packages, which is the one running back, two tight ends, and four of the 13s, which is three tight ends. So 12 of the 61 plays that were run had two or more tight ends. I think you're going to see, especially with Marcus Gilbert getting a start at right tackle now this week, I think you're going to see them give help to Gilbert more over on that side with either DJ, maybe Saunders gets a handful more plays this week. But I think you're going to see a lot more 12 and 13 personnel this week. But other than that, nothing really totally stuck out. You know, they had to go to the one personnel package, which is one tight end, four wide receivers on 14 plays in that game. And they ran the zero package, which was five wide receivers on the field for four plays. But, you know, it's kind of hard to judge this game the way it got out of hand so quickly and all. So I think we'll get a good gauge. I expect them to go back to a little bit more basic look this week with their personnel packages, not so many four wides.
And two interesting things here while we're talking, Dave, just came across Twitter. John Harbaugh is being quoted as saying the block is absolutely legal. It's 100% ethical. So just to touch on what we were talking about, Harbaugh went on to say an adjacent offensive lineman on a run play, that's away, can cut the next defender. A run play that's away can cut the next defender. So it's exactly what we just talked about, Harbaugh talking about that specific issue. So the Ravens know what they're doing there in terms of playing within the rules, in terms of setting things up. The second is, and we'll get into this now for the game Sunday, the injury report. The last thing that we're seeing here is Jericho Cotchery is now declared out for the game Sunday. That's no surprise with the hamstring. But I am surprised at seeing both Chris Kimoatu and McFadden as questionable. Kimoatu with a knee and McFadden with a hamstring. I didn't realize McFadden was on the injury report. I mean, we know he's had this lingering hamstring thing, and those things, if they don't get 100%, they can be around for a long time. It'll be interesting to see, and I guess the obvious answer is Keenan Lewis or William Gay gets the start there. What are your thoughts on anybody else on the injury report we need to take note of?
Well, Cotchery, of course, is not a surprise. That thing, I think they're just going to, until he's 100% on that thing, he's going to stay out for the most part. No, there's no need right now to rush him along. Kimoatu with the knee, he got it drained after the game with the Ravens there. And remember, this is the guy that had, you know, had the problem, with started the camp on PUP. I think this is going to be a year-long thing with him, getting his knee drained. Would not be surprised if he missed a game or two along the way here. So this is definitely a reason to be concerned. I think he will play. I don't think there's any reason to not think that Kimoatu will get to start at left guard this week. McFadden, boy, this guy missed all of training camp, all of the preseason and all with this thing. He just cannot stay on the field. And I don't know, you're the question that you ask, who goes in there next? I think you got to get Keenan Lewis in that spot now. I think you have to leave, it'd be interesting. Do you put Gay out there in his spot, and then when they go to nickel, actually bring Keenan Lewis, into the game, at the left corner spot, and then Gay slide over? You know, it's sink or swim time with Keenan Lewis right now.
It sure is. And by the way, either way they go, we know when they go nickel, Gay's going to be the inside guy. So it's either going to be, if McFadden didn't go, Gay would get the start, but a lot of the times in the nickel, he's going to be in the slot. So it will be an interesting decision if he can't go. I imagine they'll go Keenan Lewis.
Yeah, I would too. You know, that's what I would do, because it's time to find out what you have there. There's no better opportunity right now, a game to do this with, to get him some good reps in there. You're going to know real quick about this guy, I think, over the next few games, if indeed McFadden is down. So why not now? And get these, if he doesn't work out, you're going to have to get yourself in get Cortez Allen and Curtis Brown more involved here. But this is the perfect week to it. I'd like to see him put Lewis out there and give him a go at it.
Yep, I'm with you on that. We got some dings and dents, but James Harrison is good to go. And as we talked about, Gilbert will be at right tackle. Let's just say, hypothetically, Kimoatu can't go at left guard. Is that Ramon Foster going in there, or what do you think they do?
Yeah, that has to be Ramon Foster in there. You know, you're going to have Ligurski starting at right guard again. So Ramon, you know, took the majority of the snaps, I believe, in preseason at the left guard spot in his absence there. You don't have a lot of guard options here. You know, Chris Scott, he's going to be down. He has to be, you know, I would think he would be down. Unless Kimoatu is indeed down, then I guess Kimoatu and that Jamon Meredith would be your two inactive. So maybe Chris Scott is active, but there's no way he sees the field in case of injury. The thing that you lose, though, when you have Foster in there at left guard, if indeed that's the case, is the ability to trap and pull to the right side there. You know, Kimoatu, that's one of the strong points of his game, of staying low and pulling right. That's something that you're just not going to get with Ramon Foster, you know, at left guard.
Let's get into the Seahawks personnel a little bit and just talk about their personnel. When I look at this team, what we have here is on the right side, they're going to start two guys, two rookies, in Moffitt at guard and Carpenter at tackle. These guys have made one start in their professional career. This has got to be something where Lamar Woodley, you know, however they line Harrison up, whatever they do stunts-wise, this has got to be something the Steelers are just licking their chops to face those two guys. The guys on the other side, Russell Okung and Robert Gallery, they're seasoned pros. Gallery came over from Oakland, signed as a free agent, and Unger's at center. But the right side of that line got to be just – I've not seen these guys play. I know very little about them, but just the fact that they're two rookies making their second start, they'll be in Heinz Field. You know, it's going to be loud. That should be interesting to see how those two kids perform.
Yeah, I guess the bright spot for them is they get Gallery back this week at left guard. Carpenter had to play there last week, and you know, it wasn't very pretty. He should be back at, and it was even worse the right tackle that they had to play, you know, instead of Carpenter. I believe it was Giacomini. Boy, he had a bad game too. I don't think it's going to get much better with Carpenter back at right tackle either. I think they're going to have to use the tight end Zach Miller and probably McCoy quite a bit, you know, to offset the Woodley pass rush. And all, I expect Woodley to have a monster game in here. And as you said, this is a line that does not have a lot of experience in it. You're really seeing a line that really missed the OTAs and the rookie camps and all like that. So yeah, they're in trouble, you know, judging by the sacks that they gave up and all last week and the pressures or whatnot. This is a line that should be exploited Sunday.
Okay, and let's get to the skill guys. So Mike Williams, interesting guy. This is the kid that was at USC. I think everybody knows the story. Didn't play his senior year. Went to the Lions, right? He was picked by the Lions, very high. Got cut and was out of football for a year. And when Pete Carroll went to Seattle, he went up there. Did I have the story right on that?
Yeah, I think this was another one of those Matt Millen guys, you know.
Yeah,
through all that debacle with the Carlos Rogers and all like that. So
he's a big, strong receiver on one side. The Steelers are going to come into benefit here because Sidney Rice is out for the game. Sidney Rice came over from the Vikings. He is a talented guy. You could argue that he's the most talented guy on that team. Golden Tate from Notre Dame will step up and take his place. He's a young guy, went in the second round, I think, of the draft a couple years ago. He's a guy the Steelers looked at. And people were speculating that he might be a guy who's interesting to the Steelers. He's a good receiver. He's young, and they got Obamanu as their third receiver. The other two guys are, you know, Tom and Frank. And then the tight end, Zach Miller, came over from Oakland. He's a quality player. Their backs, Michael Robinson, the fullback, is dinged up and likely out, I think. And Marshawn Lynch. Let's just go back to the fact. This is a team that we see once every 4 years, and Steelers fans, I'm sure, do not see Seattle games or haven't recently because they're never on national television. The only game I watched Seattle play all last year was the playoff game when Marshawn Lynch had one of the greatest runs of all time and they knocked New Orleans out of the playoffs. So he's their feature back. Leon Washington will be the third down back. And then, of course, Tavares Jackson's the quarterback, another guy who's come over from Minnesota, a very good athlete, not such a good quarterback in his, you know, there was a time 2 or 3 years ago that I thought he was going to take the big step forward. He never really did in Minnesota. Favre came in, he never got much of a chance. And as you heard Eric Williams say on Wednesday, he's more of a placeholder. This is a guy who maybe 10 weeks into the season won't be the starting quarterback. So, you know, there's not the whole thing about this game is you just don't see firepower on the other side offensively. And it's the type of thing where, you know, I after being so wrong last week, I hesitate to say things emphatically. But you could see the Steelers pitching a game where Seattle doesn't score double digits.
Yeah, without a doubt here. You know, the main thing that they're going to be trying to do is go beast mode, as they like to say, with Marshawn Lynch. I suspect they're going to try to run left, you know, and at Kiesel and Harrison and try to do the things that the Ravens did. But let's face it, Marshawn Lynch is not a guy that lives on the edge, okay?
Nope.
He's not going to be a guy that's going to kill you, I don't think. You know, 30 for 30 yards, you know, any explosive.
He's not going to turn the corner on guys.
Right. This is a guy that is a between the tackles, power runner and all. And I just do not see him being able to make a living with the Steelers. I mean, he's going to be playing right into the teeth of the linebackers here. And the Steelers will be thankful that they don't have to get to the edges, really. You know, they shouldn't have to, you know, have to get to the edges to defend this. I think they just need to be able to, you know, guys like Ferrier and Foote, who are probably going to rotate out once again this week, you know, have to do a good job of shedding, you know, their blocks coming to the second level there. And if they do that, and if the line does, you know, plays better this week, I guess the key is going to be Aaron Smith on that left side again, which I expect Ziggy Hood to really eat into those snaps this week. But I do not see how this team will be able to run on the Steelers this week, despite the problems last week. I do not see how they're going to be able to stretch the field. I think you might try to see them, you know, some quick slants, get the ball out of Jackson's hands quick, maybe try to use the tight ends, you know, a little bit. But I think these tight ends are going to have to stay in to help not get Jackson killed. And you mentioned a good point about Jackson. I have never, you know, saw anything in this kid whatsoever. I'm with you. I think, you know, the Charlie Whitehurst era is going to happen sooner than later. And, hey, it wouldn't even surprise me if he got in the third or fourth quarter of this game.
Just an interesting side note for the Pittsburgh area crowd. Josh Portis is the third-string quarterback, kid who went to Cal PA. He's got a long and interesting background as a college quarterback, finding his way and eventually ended up at Cal, small school Division III, obviously. And, you know, he's or Division II maybe. And he's in the NFL, stuck with them, obviously a developmental guy, but nice note that he's on that roster. Flipping over to the defensive side of the ball for Seattle, honestly, I look at this and I see Leroy Hill, I see Aaron Curry. I know a little bit about Earl Thomas is probably the name in the back, the free safety out of Texas. He's a Pro Bowl caliber player, probably their best defensive player. Marcus Trufant is a good corner. Not a lot of big name guys there. They did a decent job last week against the Niners. They stayed in that game the whole way, and then their special teams really let them down with two touchdowns in a minute within the last 6-7 minutes of the game. I haven't seen tape on these guys, Dave. Any thoughts on what they're bringing there? They're playing the standard 4-3.
Well, I thought their defense played a pretty good game. You know, they held the Niners to just one third down conversion in that game. They did well against the run. You know, but outside, I like Branch on the line. I think he's a little bit of an underrated player there. And you heard Tomlin comment on their safeties the other day, and, you know, Earl Thomas and Cam Chancellor. So I think they're pretty solid right there. But those guys, I think, are going to, you know, especially Chancellor, the strong safety, I think they're going to get themselves in a situation where they're going to have to get him up in the box quite a bit, because I expect the Steelers to try to run on him first. And I think they'll have good success with him running. I don't think they're, you know, you hear Ben Roethlisberger talk about, oh, we're going to run the no huddle even with Gilbert in there. I think that's a giant smoke screen right there. I think they want to take it easy on Gilbert this first game. I think, and as I mentioned earlier, I think you're going to see a lot of two tight end sets and just trying to blow them off the ball, period, here. But, you know, their defense just is not very, you know, intimidating. And You know, their linebacker core is you know, Curry, as we talked to the beat writer the other day, he just really hasn't lived up to expectations there. You know, Leroy Hill, their middle linebacker with Wright, you know, I just don't see how, you know, the Steelers will take their shots down the field at different times of the game here. You know, just as long as you're staying away from and not playing pitch and catch with Earl Thomas, like Roethlisberger did with Reed last week, you know, I think you're going to be fine on this. I think the Steelers will be a little bit more conservative this week, but they will take their shots, you know, when the opportunity presents themselves.
So let's get a little bit into, you know, we've covered a lot of this here, but just a couple general questions. If you were ever going to play 8 guys in a box in press coverage against a team, if the Steelers were ever going to do that, this is the week to do this. The Steelers will absolutely take away the run. Golden Tate has some speed. Mike Williams is not going to beat anybody down the field just on a straight post. He's a big guy, though. But they're not going to play that. They're not going to play bump and run on the corners, particularly if they're not going to do it. So, but this will be interesting. Well, I think Troy will be up along the line. He just dared Tavares Jackson to throw the ball. And as you said, you know, try to contain Marshawn Lynch around the edges and send him into the middle of that defense. And it's going to be tough. But the Steelers, so that's how the Steelers are going to approach it defensively. But I think the more interesting question is how the Steelers approach it offensively. One of the things in that Baltimore game is Ben distributed the ball. I thought it was, I mentioned this in another podcast. Every receiver had a catch, including Heath Miller. I think the top four receivers and Heath Miller all had a catch within the first 6 receptions. And then he went to Mike Wallace a little bit more often, and he had more of the catches as the time went on. I actually think Ben will make a conscious decision to be doing that all year, get all the guys in the game early, get them all a touch, get them all a catch. So I don't think the Steelers have that kind of petty thing going on. I do generally think it's about team, but you do know those guys want balls. And they're, as we've talked about all year long, they're not enough to go around. And it'll be interesting to see, I think, how the passing game develops in this one.
Yeah, and I think something that has been underused in past seasons and all, it's one of Arian's faults and all, is not using Mendenhall out of the backfield, you know, like he should be able to do. I think they're going to be so keyed, you know, on not giving up the explosive play this week against the Steelers. Now, of course, if you're able to run the ball, it sets up, you know, it definitely opens up the whole gamut of things offensively. But I'd like to see, you know, a couple, 2 or 3 drop-offs to Mendenhall here to slow down their pass rush a little bit, keep them honest and all. And I think that's going to be part of spreading the ball around as well. You know, one thing, we talked about this with Antonio Brown outside of his fantastic training camp that he had and his fantastic preseason. There are still times we talked about the other day where it looks like he misses these hot reads or whatnot. That stuff's got to stop. They got to get on the same page, him and Roethlisberger, on these, because I mean, if you hit this kid on, you know, on a hot read against the right coverages and the right looks, you know, with this is a guy that can take it 60 yards to the house, as we saw in preseason. So, you know, I think that's going to be a key, but I do expect them to spread the ball around. Heath Miller probably blocking and then releasing off the line should have him another 3 or 4 catches for maybe, you know, 30 or 40 yards this week as well.
Yeah, and, you know, let's point out, I don't want to disparage Seattle here. They were tough against the run. They helped Frank Gore down to the San Francisco to 2.9 yards per carry. San Francisco is not a particularly explosive offense with Alex Smith at quarterback, but they have some skilled players on the outside, and Frank Gore is a good back. So it will be interesting to see the Steelers approach, and you and I have both expect them to throw the ball a fair bit this season. But I would think in this game they do come out and try to establish the run and really – just because of the pacing they took and the way they took it last week, I think they probably want to play Steeler football, for lack of a better term. Go out there and beat somebody up. And I'll tell you, I sure hope we see it this week, because if for whatever reason the Steelers run into trouble this week, and this is a 3-point game, this game comes down in the last 5 minutes, there is going to be, the Steeler Nation is going to be apoplectic over the coming week. So interesting stuff to see. Before we get into our stuff going into the week, anything you want to wrap up on the coverage of the game?
No, that's about it. And you hit it right on the head there. Boy, some heads are going to explode if we don't blow these guys out. I think if we only win by 10 or whatnot, you know, 10 or 12, if we don't cover this cover this game and really blow them out and keep them, you know, keep them below 10 points, I think you're going to see the typical stuff that we saw, you know, the sky is falling type stuff. But, yeah, I think they get it done.
Now, let me give you the here's the sky is falling, bite your fingernails, stat of the week. Ready?
Yes.
Home favorites of more than 14 points the week after a loss are 0-10 against the spread since 1998. The Steelers have been in that role twice, winning 3-0 as a 16-point favorite against Miami in 2007 and losing straight up to Oakland 27-24 in 2009 as a 14.5-point favorite.
Wow.
So if you want to get nervous, there's your stat to get nervous.
Well, you know, right now we're seeing this on the board at the Steelers minus 14.5. They have to cover this, David. They have to cover this.
All right. So here's let's lead with the Steelers in our picks for the week. I'll let you lay it out there first since I laid it out there first last week. Give it a go.
All right. 31-6.
Ah, Christ, I wrote it down. 31-7.
All right. So you think they get in the end zone one time. I think they get two field goals. This is going to be a pissed off team. And you've had Warren Sapp take shots at him. You've had everybody and their brother take shots at him right now. Tomlin's even taken shots at him on Sirius this week with his defense. This team is pissed off. I don't see them breaking 10 points this week. That's why I say 31-6 Steelers. They cover.
All right, so we're obviously in agreement again on this one. I have got to go back and listen to our picks last week and see how we did. I think we generally were pretty good, but I'm going to have to go. But I won't say much more until I go and I'll make sure next week that we have the exact results. But let's roll through the games, all the games this week. We'll keep our breakdowns of the games to a minimum. But feel free to throw in your comments where you deem appropriate. An interesting game on the board. The first one is the Bears at the Saints. The Bears with a great victory last week over the Falcons at home. The Saints took a tough loss in a great game against the Packers. Saints by 6.5. What do you think?
Saints going to be without Colston. I haven't seen the status of Lance Moore this week. I think he's a key cog in there. I like what I think they'll use Darren Sproles a little bit more, you know, missing those guys. That said, boy, the Bears really surprised me last week with what they did against the Falcons there. Plus, Brian Urlacher, you know, believe lost his mom and all as well. So this is going to be a fired-up team once again going down to New Orleans there. New Orleans wins this game, but the Bears cover. Give me the Bears plus the 7.
Yeah, I'm at 6.5, and I would lay the 6.5 on the Saints. Lions looked great. Chiefs looked terrible. 7.5's the line. Stafford and Megatron, they're going to be here for a long time together. What a good combination that is. The Chiefs aren't as bad as they looked last week. I probably won't touch this one, but if you know, gun to the head, I'm laying the points.
Yeah, Megatron's supposed to play, and you know, I think Kansas City's going the other direction there. I like what the Lions are doing, but they really did a good job last week against the Bucks. So, you know, 7.5, I'll lay it with the Lions. I'm a believer.
Jets at home, laying 9. You know, they could lay 29. They're going to kill them.
I agree. They're going to kill them. Jets cover.
Raiders at the Bills. We got a lot of this West Coast coming east this week. We're certainly in the Steeler game. That's a thing in the Steelers' favor. So we got a lot. Another interesting fact. I think this is the first time since 1970 that there's no divisional game this week. And this is because when they were thinking about the lockout, if they had to knock some games out of the schedule, the way they would do it is they could take a whole week out without having to revamp the schedule. And this whole week certainly would have been taken out. No divisional games. The Raiders coming east to play Buffalo. I'm going to go, you know, I think we both like the Bills, and I like the Raiders, and I love the Raiders' ground game. Not so thrilled with maybe their passing game, but they're a physical team. I think this is a good game. I'd be interested to watch some of this game. I'm going to take the Raiders plus three.
You know what? The Bills really, I talked in that last podcast how they're going to sneak up on people. They did. They beat the Chiefs, but the Chiefs are going the other direction. I like what Oakland's doing. You know, the Woodson coaching that secondary over there, they look good. They did all the little things they needed to do to beat Denver last week. All that being said, I'm seeing 3.5 here with the Bills favored. Give me the Raiders plus the 3.5. The Bills win this on a last-second field goal.
Okay. Another kind of interesting game, just based on where these, you know, who knows what these teams are, is Arizona coming west, coming east to play Washington. Washington looked really good. Rex Grossman looked really good. But I'm going to take the Cards plus 3.5, and I think the Cards win this one outright.
I do too. Give me the Cards plus 4. I'm not a believer in the Redskins just yet. They're going to have to do it a couple weeks for me to be a believer.
Ravens at Tennessee. You know, look, Ravens are a good team based on week one. Laying 5.5 is the bookies don't know where to put it, as we always talk about. 5.5 means the bookies don't know what to do. Less than a touchdown, I lay the points.
I'm laying them with you.
We're all both on the Steelers. Green Bay at Carolina, a great debut for Cam Newton, much better than I think even the biggest Newton fans could have predicted. A nice thing for Steve Smith. He had a big game. He's got to be a happy guy, even though they lost. He got a lot of yards, and he's a guy who, you know, maybe he thought maybe his career was coming to a close in Carolina, and maybe it's not. But this Green Bay team is just too good. 10's a lot of points for an away team, but if you're going to do it, this is the week to do it.
I agree. And right now, as it's looking, I've been hard on Cam Newton all offseason. He looked okay in that first week. I'm going to have to see it multiple weeks, though. But right now, he's proven me wrong as far as my evaluation on him. All that said, I do not see – I mean, this is a gimme, if you ask me, for the Packers. This is one this is a stone-cold lead pipe lock, if you ask me. I'm laying the points.
All right. Tampa at Minnesota. Minnesota kept it close against San Diego. They returned the opening kickoff for a touchdown. Percy Harvin is a Devin Hester-like guy with more talent at receiver. He's one of the most exciting players in the game. He, DeSean Jackson, those type of guys, explosive stuff. I like them. I don't really like the Vikes that much, though. I'm not in love with Tampa either. I think they're a little overhyped. But I'm going to go against the grain here and take the three. I don't know if there is a grain on a line, but I'm going to take the three on the road with the Bucs. Having it be a close game down to the wire, I don't know that the Bucs win, but I'd rather have the points than lay the points. But at the end of the day, I'm probably not going to play.
I'm not going to play this. This has Bush written all over it. But give me the Buccaneers plus 3 if a gun to my head.
A lot of stuff the same with you and I here, Dave. Only one apart. The last 1 o'clock game, I think you could have gotten pretty good odds if you had laid a bet in Vegas on what the line would have been in this game a month ago. I'm pretty sure if you'd said Cleveland would have been favored, that you'd won a lot of money. The Browns are favored by 1 at the Colts. Kerry Collins is playing. We both said it last week. The Colts stink. I don't think the Browns are a bad team. I got to say, I'm a little more than shocked that they lost to the Bengals last week, but I'm not going to give up on them. I'm going to lay the 1. I think the Browns go on the road and win this game.
I'm going to go against you here. I think the Colts have enough explosive play-wise. I think they can stretch the field against the Browns despite, you know, T.J. Ward and Hayden and all back there. I think they're going to Kerry Collins, I think, has a better game in here. I think they match up well against the Browns. Let's face it, I don't think they're going to be able to dump McCoy on his butt. I think this ends up being a high-scoring game, and I want the Colts plus the 3, and I would not be surprised if the Colts won this outright.
You're seeing 3. I'm seeing 1. Okay, that's interesting. Dallas, San Fran, we got some tasty 4 o'clock games, and I like this one. I've always got a little soft spot for San Fran here, and I'm interested to see how Jim Harbaugh does with this team. I do like some of their outside guys. Alex Smith has not gotten it done yet as a quarterback. This is obviously his last chance. Dallas gave one away. They're going to come in hot. They're laying 3, but I'm going to go with the Niners.
Wow. Boy, Cowboys 0-2 to start the season? Is that possible? I don't think so. I think Romo's too good a quarterback. I guess Dez Bryant's going to be the wild card here, but I would suspect he's going to tape that thing up and go. That guy is just a beast, man. If he could ever stay healthy, that he got a 5-cent head, but he's a beast you know, at wide receiver. I think they just have too many weapons. I'm taking the Cowboys laying the points.
All right. Texans at the Dolphins. I fear the Texans. I think the Texans, you know, I said this last year, I thought the Texans would be in the AFC Championship game. Their defense let them down. Their defense is going to be much better. This would be an interesting game. Arian Foster should be back. You know, the Dolphins, they don't do anything for me. I don't see it. This line, they're at home. They're getting three. I'll take the Texans.
Yeah, I'm with you here because – look at all the explosive plays that the Dolphins. I think the Texans are really looking at that film that Tom Brady put out there. Not that everybody can run what Tom Brady does last week there, but the Dolphins, they just give up too many explosive plays, and the Texans, I know they're capable of stretching the field. I don't think it matters if Foster plays in this game or not. Give me until they prove me wrong, I'm taking the Texans and laying the points.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Certainly the marquee game of the week and one that I will be seated in front of a television for is San Diego at New England. Wow. I mean, what do you say about New England, the job Tom Brady and their offense did last week? The points is a lot, and the Chargers are a good team. I mean, you know, if you had to rank the AFC teams after week one, it probably goes New England, Baltimore, San Diego. I'm not touching this game at 6.5, but I'm watching it.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. You know, the Patriots are to the Chargers what the Steelers are to the Ravens, I think, you know.
Yep.
Chargers have some weapons to hang with them, and the Dolphins were able to hit the Patriots on some plays last week. So, the numbers could come off the scoreboard on this one here. Give me the Chargers plus the points. I got a funny feeling about this one.
Okay. Cincinnati at Denver. Other than who cares, Denver's laying 3.5. I think Cincinnati stinks, and I like to bet against rookie quarterbacks, so I'll take Denver laying 3.5.
Yeah, I'm with you. You know, if Denver loses this game, you know, you're really going to see the Tim Tebow billboards go up around town. You know, I don't think Orton's that bad of a quarterback. Yeah, I think, you know, even though I think Sean Marino is in danger of missing this game, don't know the full scope of the wide receiver there, but I don't think it matters in here. I don't think the Bengals, you know, can do this. So give me the Broncos later points.
Eagles and Falcons, a good Sunday night game, 8:25 in Atlanta. Eagles are -1. It's an interesting line. I would have bet that it would have been a little bit the other way. I'm surprised at the line. My personal opinion is both these teams are a little bit overrated. I think they're good teams. I don't think they're great teams. I don't have any idea. I want to see them play. Again, another game I'm going to watch, another game I'm not going to bet.
Matt Ryan is hell at home, man. He's just hell at home. He can win at home. And, you know, there's a lot of emotion here, Vic coming in and all like that. I think the Falcons will be able to run on the Eagles. I think that'll end up being the difference in this game. So I'm probably not going to touch this one, but if I had to, give me the Falcons plus the points.
And then the Monday night game, I'm sure people expected better this game maybe when they scheduled it. The Rams at the Giants. I'm a Sam Bradford fan. I know they're a little dinged up. The Giants are really dinged up. Their season is on the line here. I really think if they go 0-2, I don't see the Giants winning more than 8 games anyway. They're not a playoff team in my book. You know what? I'm going to take the Rams plus 6.
Boy, I can't see how the Rams lose this game. Boy, you got to think pretty soon, Kaufman, is this the game, you know, if he loses that they go ahead and make the change there? It might be a week or two early here. What are you seeing on the line on this?
I'm seeing 6.
6, boy. I think Bradford's worth that 6. I'm going to lay the 6. Boy, these road teams, man.
You're going to take the 6.
No, I'm going to lay the 6. Rams are laying 6, right?
No, the Giants are favored in New York.
Oh, see, I'm seeing it off the board right now for some reason. Oh, hell, I'll take those points.
Yeah, if you're gonna lay them, you'll certainly take them.
Yeah, without a doubt. I don't know why this game's off the board on my end. It must be because of Bradford in that hand or whatnot, but or Giants and Hakeem Nicks. I think he's got a knee contusion on that. Yeah. I haven't paid attention to this line because it's so far out right now. But yeah, give me the Rams plus the points. And hey, what do you think if he loses this? What if the Giants get blown out? On national television here, is this the end of Coughlin?
No, I don't think in week two. We see so few in-season coaching changes. I think it would be taught. If you're going to do it, I guess there's nothing wrong with doing it early because you can salvage the season. But I think if you committed to the guy at the beginning of the year, you got to give him more than two games to do something.
Okay. What did you think about the hoodie show last night? Did you watch that?
I did not.
Okay, part two will be on next week, and you'll have NFL Network's going to give you plenty of opportunity to watch part one all week.
I will get that one. Let me just throw one thing at you. The college football game Saturday night, 8 o'clock. You got Oklahoma going into Florida State. Any of you want it?
I could care less about it. I'll have it going on in the background while I'm working on some stuff, but I don't have an opinion either way on it. What's your thoughts?
I think it'd be a good game to watch. I always root for the Sooners, but I'll take Florida State plus the points at home.
You know, I get so much of this Florida State crap down here. You know, it's nauseating. So, I don't know. I think the Seminoles can win this game.
All right. Well, that's going to wrap up episode 17 of the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. Remember, Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com. You can follow Dave at Steelers Depot. You can follow me at Hammer Speaks. Check us out on iTunes. Call the hotline. You can email us. There are all sorts of ways. You can find all that information on SteelersDepot.com, the most comprehensive Steelers site on the internet. We'll be back at you Monday, and we sure as hell better have a Steeler win to talk about.
Amen. Thanks for listening.